the Ulysses, man's greatest achievement. A ship capable of traveling to distant galaxies, but a freak accident leaves the ship helpless. Its AI, damaged, dangerous, plays a deadly game with the two surviving members of the crew. If they indulge the machine's newfound passion for science fiction and fantasy trivia, it will permit limited access to the astrogation matrix and star drive. For astronauts Clive Ashenden and Rob Wickens, the choice is clear. If they ever want to see Earth again, they must define the A to Z of SFF.
A is for Asimov. Isaac. Author. Continue.
Okay, well, if we're going to continue to talk about Isaac Asimov, we can't not talk about the Foundation series, can we?
After the robots, the Foundation trilogy and after are the ones that really made Asimov's name, really. Real big, broad, big-thinking science fiction.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at it, you've got iRobot comes out in 1950, then you've got 1951 Foundation, 1952 Foundation and Empire, 1953 Second Foundation. So you've got those, you've got the initial trilogy and that first robot sort of collection stroke novel. And that's and then also in 1953 The Caves of Steel with the first Elijah Bailey book, and that's an amazing output, you know, the amazingly consistent high quality, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, really knocking it out of the park in terms of innovative ideas and just great stories.
Yeah, and the Foundation series kind of it initially links it to his own Galactic Empire series, although at this stage when he's writing Foundation there isn't a series, he's just written the one novel, Pebble in the Sky. But it's sort of set in the same universe, only sort of further on, and I guess it's his take on sort of Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, isn't it?
Well, that's what he always claimed it was basically based on, but that's what he claimed it was based on, certainly. And it's that sort of breadth of, you know, he's basically writing a future history of the galaxy. So it doesn't really get any bigger in terms of breadth of scale than the Foundation books.
Yeah, I think so. And as a reader going into it first time, that's what really appealed to me, was the sort of breadth of it. It was like the fact that, you know, you'd be reading about one chapter of the Foundation, and then a few pages later, suddenly we were hundreds of years in the future, and it was like, okay, and now here we are. And it's, yeah, I guess we should talk about the sort of science fiction sort of idea behind the Foundation series. It's not just about the fall of a galactic empire. It's about this idea, you have this character, Harry Seldon, who invents a branch of science called psychohistory, which is basically a scientific way of predicting the future based on sort of the idea that you get enough, once you have enough variables of information about human beings as a mass, then they will tend to behave in a certain way. So you can predict within a few percentage points the course of human history if you have enough information.
Yeah. So what Harry Seldon discovers through the use of psychohistory is that the Galactic Empire is going to fall. And there are two ways it can go. It can either go and cause 30,000 years worth of chaos and anarchy, or...
Yes, a new Dark Age.
A
Galactic Dark Age.
Correct. So, yes. Yeah. Or you can have 1,000 years of chaos and panic and fear in the streets and fire in the skies, and then society will sort itself back out again. So Seldon decides to set up this thing called the Foundation, which is basically going to be a way of gradually nudging humanity towards this second path.
Yeah, and also, and at the same time, sort of protecting the knowledge that that humanity has, because obviously, as empires break down, as there is sort of wars and sort of shortages, then the knowledge of how to use certain technology falls into disuse, and you know, the people that built the initial machines die out. That knowledge of how to make those machines dies out, and we see that as we go through the various stories. But so part of it is a sort of mission to kind of have a kind of brain trust of that information and keep that so that it can be sort of seeded back in at the right time.
Hmm. Yeah, so it's almost like it's building an archive at the same time as trying to basically influence the whole of humanity.
Yes, and at the same time, that there are various secret plans, aren't they? So you have the Foundation think that they have a certain various points in their history think they have certain missions, and then that's not your real mission. This is your real mission. There's a lot of it's funny. He founds the Foundation, and then he sort of treats it like a sort of errant child and doesn't sort of, oh, you didn't need to know that at that point. You know, it's like, it's quite amusing.
It's like, come on, dude, seriously, you know, just give us all the facts, because, you know, otherwise how can we do our jobs properly? What you also have is the so-called Second Foundation, which is like a super secret foundation that's kind of tasked. That was kind of the bit where I started to get a little bit confused. I wasn't quite sure what the Second Foundation was for, if the Foundation was supposed to be doing what Harry Seldon wanted.
It's a secret.
Oh, man. That's why, then.
No, well, the thing about the First Foundation is that although Harry Seldon invents psychohistory, there aren't any psychohistorians in the First Foundation.
Right. Oh, okay.
So all the psychohistorians go into the Second Foundation. So... So it's kind of the foundation is almost like the sort of the public face, the sort of business arm of the foundation idea, and they are the sort of secret brain trust who are there to sort of intervene in case things go badly wrong, like they do when we get the appearance of the Mule in Foundation and Empire. A mutant who sort of skews the psycho the way history was supposed to go.
Yeah, he's kind of like the X Factor there, really, isn't he? He's the Mule is basically kind of a telepath, but he can influence emotion, so he can actually skew things. He can cause revolutions, and he can basically take over worlds by being able to influence events in a way sort of counter to what the Foundation would want.
And that's the thing, you know, although psycho history is pretty good, it can't sort of, you know, there's always that random element that might come in, and in this case it does. So that's partly why there is a Second Foundation.
I mean, in a way, you've kind of got It's kind of the mirror to the whole three laws of robotics thing, where you know, you've got this set of laws, and again they're not infallible. You've got this situation that should work in a certain way, and because of elements beyond the protagonist's control, they spiral out of what he predicted.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, so you've got the initial trilogy of novels, Foundation, Foundation and Empire, and Second Foundation, which come out 1 year after each other and are very successful, very influential. But then, sort of almost 30 years later, we get more Foundation books. This is Foundation's Edge, then Foundation and Earth, which are both sequels to the initial trilogy. And then after that, he goes back and he writes two prequel novels, Prelude to Foundation, and his last published novel or the last one he wrote before he died, rather, Forward the Foundation, in 1993, which comes out in 1993.
So you basically had this 25-year gap where Asimov was pretty much just writing popular science books. And then do we know what it was that sort of caused him to decide to start writing the Foundation books again after this dry, well, I wouldn't call it a dry patch at all, after concentrating and being so successful in this sort of second, third, fourth career, I guess?
I don't know, but I do have a feeling about it, which is that as we've mentioned, the Foundation series is linked to the Empire series of novels, but it's a lot of these later books seem to be about legacy. When you read them, they seem to be about tying things together, and specifically tying the Robot series of novels and stories together into the same fictional universe as the Foundation books.
Right.
So, you know, so we get our Daniel Olivor appearing in the Foundation series. And, you know, so basically things like Foundation and Earth and the later Robot books as well, particularly Robots and Empire, they very much are seem to be more about, you know, sort of filling in the gaps and sort of tying things up in a nice neat bow than they are, I have a burning desire to tell a story about this universe. Not that they're a bad read. I mean, I like found, you know, I read the first four initially, and I had no problem with Foundation's Edge as a carry-on from the first three. But it's interesting, the first three are very have that sort of 50s novel thing of being quite thin, you know, not being a massive word count. And then when you get into the 80s, the books are a lot thicker. The writing style is slightly different.
Do you think he was perhaps trying to address some of the criticisms he'd had about his writing style in the past and sort of be a bit...
I do think that's part of it. I think it's also... I don't know. I almost want to compare him to Stephen King here, where you get the early novels are, you know, and compared to the later novels, where the later novels tend to be a lot, you know, bigger tomes. Well, I don't know whether it's a young man writing as opposed to an older man writing, or whether that's, you could apply it to a lot of authors regardless of their sex. I think, you know, the essential novels really are that initial trilogy. If you're really in love with that world, then it's lovely that there are more stories to read. You know, and they're fine, but the trilogy for me is the sort of is the essential bit that you need, you know, and Foundation, Empire, and Second Foundation. You do get that sort of, the mule is a really memorable character, and it's sort of, you know, really sort of beds that whole thing down, and the mystery, you know, and then the mystery of the Second Foundation, which does kind of gets tied up to a certain extent at the end of Second Foundation, at least the location of it. And then they go into it more into the in the sort of subsequent novels. I guess he felt that there was more to say, particularly about the Second Foundation. Definitely. I mean, you know, you can't not it'd be interesting science fiction and at least have a look at the Foundation series, even if it's not your particular thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think certainly you've got that clear writing style that Asimov has, but it actually makes them, the Foundation books, not a particularly difficult read. It's just whether if you're after something a bit more poetical, then you're really not going to find it. It is about the ideas and getting that broad sweep of what he's after.
Yeah, I mean, talking about that, I mean, we've already discussed Douglas Adams, have we not? And
we have.
And you would not have the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy without the Encyclopedia Galactica that you get this, you get these rather dry entries for at the beginning of each section of the Foundation series.
Yeah, absolutely. It's almost like,
I mean, it's very consciously, you know, a sort of like pulling the leg of the Foundation series in that way, and sort of like nodding to it. I seem to remember there's even a bit where it actually sort of says that it replaced the Encyclopedia Galactica, which it describes as being a bit dull.
Yeah, so,
it's, you know, there's lots of this sort of impish kind of, you know, thumbing your nose at the sort of the austere, you know, things that come before. Because let's face it, by that stage, Isaac Asimov, although, you know, he sort of stepped back from writing science fiction for a while, but in a way, if he hadn't written any more science fiction, it wouldn't matter, because he's already up there on that kind of metaphorical Mount Rushmore of science fiction, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he's up there alongside your Clarks, your Dicks, your, well, you know, sort of just, you can almost sort of fill in your who's who of science fiction, who should be up there in this sort of mythical pantheon, can't you?
Absolutely. I mean, he did so much in his life, you know, and influenced everyone in so many different ways. I mean, this was the guy that actually invented the word robotics, don't forget. And he's got, he's got monuments like you wouldn't believe. He's got a crater on Mars named after him. He's got an asteroid named after him. People do view him with incredible affection just because of the sheer, the heft of his body of work is just so massive that you can't not admire it, even if you're not particularly a fan of, say, the science fiction. You know, some of the popular science that he wrote was, or the mystery stuff, which we haven't really touched on because I guess that's not really part of the remit, but, you know.
I mean, the Elijah Bailey books are mysteries.
Yeah.
They're just space mysteries, and I enjoy them for that, you know. It's like Locked Room mysteries, only it's on, you know, Space Colony 5 or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's in a locked room that happens to be buried like a mile underneath the Earth, so for added difficulty. I mean, yeah, he could just pretty much write anything he wanted and make a success out of it. So for that, regardless of the incredible work he did with the Three Laws and Psychohistory and stuff like that, you know, he is a remarkable figure, not just in science fiction, but in literature in general. And I think it's maybe a little bit of a shame that he doesn't get the kudos that he perhaps should for being just so broadly influential.
I think part of it is when you go back and you read his stuff, it is, especially his earlier works, they're very much fall into, I guess, a sort of a thing that a lot of science fiction out of that sort of 50, that sort of 40s, 50s, early 60s period does, which is you get a lot of stories which are initially written for the for pulp magazines.
Mm.
So when you're reading something like Foundation, then the actual sort of novella, it's almost made up of a series of novellas or short stories, because they've already been, a lot of them have already been published.
Mm.
You know, and so he gets this, you know, a lot of these authors were getting their initial kind of like, oh, this is going to be serialized in Astounding Magazine or what have you, and then it gets reprinted and they nicen it up a little bit, and that becomes one chunk of this galaxy spanning saga. So you get almost like a slightly episodic feel to it, which is sort of, I know it's very much of its time. I think that sort of style of writing it, that sort of, it's almost like the kind of that sort of Dickensian thing of sort of writing things in pieceworks, you know, sort of where it's sort of installments. Because you read a lot of his novels and they don't have that thing of I've sat down and wrote this all in one go. You know, it's all these sort of linked pieces.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, which is, and it's, I'm not at all knocking that style. I just think that, you know, in subsequent years, that's a style that went out of fashion.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. But that being said, you know, they still hold up as a piece, even though there was a bit of work.
Oh, absolutely.
Done.
Yes. Yeah.
So, Isaac Asimov, phew, what a guy. Do we think Cyclomedia that that overview is going to be enough to tickle your fancy and get us that little bit closer to Galactic Central?
Input satisfactory.
Well, that's good to hear.
Okay.
Ah, lovely. Yes, I think we spent quite enough on Isaac Asimov for one, two episodes, don't you think? Let's get ourselves out of here.
Well, yeah, well, and you never know, Rob, some of that talk about the zeroth law might have actually gone in, you know, so fingers crossed, eh?
Let's hope so, yes. Yeah, just a subtle little hint there. Cyclomedia, know what I mean? Just bear that one in mind. Okay, punch us in.
Oh, okay, he's releasing the navigational systems now and putting in coordinates.
Sweet, okay. And three, and two, and one, and off we go.
The A to Z of SFF was written and performed by Rob Wickings and Clive Ashenden. The show was produced and edited by Rob Wickings at All Hallows Post of Reading, the finest sound available anywhere. Would you like to know more? Go to www.theatozofsff.com. Like us on Facebook as The A to Z of SFF, or follow us on Twitter at The A to Z of SFF.